Welcome to Horror Makes Us Happy, the podcast where we ask the question, what is it about horror that makes us happy? Your hosts are Steve Becker and myself, Chris Whitman, and you can find out more about us at our website, horrormakesushappy.com. Before we get started, this is the trigger warning. This is a horror podcast and we talk about horror things, so we could delve into sensitive subjects. There may be foul language and or discussions about violence, but that's not necessarily what the podcast is about. It's actually more of a deep delve into answering the question, what is it we like about horror? I already said that. But, you know, that's the show.
Yes.
Okay.
Today we are talking to Mr. Al Going Back, author best known for his books Crota, Coyote Rage, and Darker Than Night. Welcome.
Oh, thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Our pleasure. Before we get into the meat of the interview, you want to let us know what you're currently working on?
I am currently working on a book that takes place during the opening days of the Civil War. I mean, it's a definitely horror, dark fantasy type thing. And I know when I started doing research, I noticed that today in America, we got a lot of similarities to what happened at the beginning of the Civil War with people being divided and books being rewritten and, you know, one side and the other hating each other. So I was like, So it takes place there in a very large cemetery. So I got, you know, ghosts and creatures and all kinds of fun stuff. So that should be out maybe next year, the year after. And I've had a few new books come out, been reissued, like a Breed just came out from Cemetery Dance, which takes place in old St. Augustine, Florida, America's oldest European settlement.
Yes. Cool. Stuff to look forward to. Well, this podcast is less about your body of work and more about what you yourself have been a fan of through the years. That said, it's not meant to be a therapy session. So if there's any questions that you don't want to answer, you say pass and we'll move on. But starting with childhood, what are some of your earliest memories of scary things?
Well, my earliest memories is kind of funny because when I was 9 years old, my mother gave me my very first allowance, a whopping 50 cents, which shows how old I am. She took me to the closest town because we lived out in rural America. And the closest town had a population of 1,200. It was so small, it had one four-way stop sign in the whole place. But no toy stores, no big department stores, but there was a little Rexall drugstore. And I walked in there tightly clutching my two quarters in my hand. And there on the shelf in the magazine rack was a magazine called Famous Monsters of Filmland. And the cover was adorned with werewolves. And I instantly fell in love with horror, monsters, and all things scary. And spent my first 50 cents on a magazine that would give you nightmares for a 9-year-old.
Money well spent.
It was. I'm a big fan. I'm a big monster kid. And I was like all the kids back in the 60s and 70s. I read Famous Monsters and Vampirella and Creepy and Eerie and collected the Aurora Monster kits. And, you know, I adorned my room and everything I get my hands on with horror and monsters. So it started my life down a path that I still do today.
Cool. Did you manage to get the creepies and eerie and lore and stuff in that small town?
In a small town. I mean, sometimes I missed issues, but it was the only place that had a magazine rack. And it's where I discovered comic books and, you know, the little Rexall store probably saved my life from boredom because I lived in a mobile home on 5 acres of land next to a national forest. So there was nobody around to play with. You didn't have internet. You didn't have video games. So if I wasn't traipsing through the woods, I was indulged reading spooky stuff.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they managed to get some of that stuff out there, because I know when I was looking into like the Warren and Eerie, the only place I could find any of it was in comic book stores. And, you know, if you're in a larger city, you can get access to some of that stuff. But, you know, if you're just in town 1200, they've got a limited supply.
I was very fortunate. I mean, it you know, pretty much saved me from dying of boredom. I mean, the spooky stuff was great. And, you know, back then you had like 3 channels on television, so I didn't get to see a lot of the monster movies, but I read about them many years before I was ever able to see them. So I grew up with Boris Karloff and Lugosi.
You know, as I was talking through that, it made me realize that I wonder if there was one or more other people in the town who are also horror fans, because you know, just buying that stuff for one person maybe might not have been financially feasible for whoever owned that store. But if they had a couple copies to sell to multiple people, that might be more interesting to them. Did you happen to run into anybody else in that small town that you grew up in that were fans of horror?
Well, my cousins started buying them because they saw my issues and they started grabbing them too. But other than that, I never came across a classmate or anybody else that ever read this stuff. I was kind of like a freak doing my own thing. So, you know, I could talk to them about it, but never. And I mean, mostly kids in school were rural kids. They lived on farms and they had no interest in monsters or horror films.
Mm. Maybe it was somebody older that you didn't really have a connection with.
Very possible, because I did find older kids who were into comics, and that's why I knew at an early age, do not trash my comics to take care of them, because I knew the value of them. I knew some college kids who were collecting them and making money on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, I think you briefly mentioned some of the horror, like the classics on TV, but it's, if I remember correctly, you said you did not see those?
There wasn't a lot of the classics like Frankenstein, Wolfman, The Mummy. I mean, there was movies. I remember Hammer had movies on TV you could see. We had the local horror host. I think he was out of Chicago. The channel came out of it, and it was Seymour Presents. And so we had the creature features. Mm. But I remember a lot of movies like prehistoric movies where they use blown up lizards for dinosaurs and some really bad movies. But the ones I wanted to see, it took me a long time before I finally got to see them.
Any particular standout to you as ones that you enjoyed?
Oh, I loved them all. I mean, I still look at the classics. I mean, Boris Karloff in the original Frankenstein is an amazing performance. And I study his movement every time I watch that film. I mean, he was terrifying with doing very little. Just the way he walked and he leaned when he walked, or his facial expressions. I mean, you know, King Kong was a classic. And I love watching that movie. Lon Chaney, I was a big Wolfman fan. Creature from the Black Lagoon, because that story was very believable. I mean, it had a backstory to it. Years later, I became friends with Rico Browning, who played the creature in all the underwater scenes.
Nice. Pretty cool. For those who don't know, I actually met you at StokerCon in 23, and you are a fairly tall individual. So, identifying with Frankenstein's movements, I can just picture that.
Well, yeah, I got the Frankenstein look going for me, that's for sure. But I always identified with the monsters because, you know, they weren't vicious. You know, I mean, Frankenstein couldn't help his situation. He didn't ask to be put together and brought to life. He was a very sad creature. You know, a character. Same thing with Lon Chaney in the Wolfman movies. He didn't want the curse. He always tried to get out of it. He wanted to not be a werewolf. Mm-hmm. And a creature from the Black Lagoon. I mean, we went to a remote jungle location and captured his ass. I mean, so I always identified with the monsters. They were always the underdogs, and they were not necessarily bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Did you participate in Halloween as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Halloween. I look forward to Halloween. I remember my first Halloween I ever did. I was 6 years old, and I got a silly silly costumes. They used to sell the Ben Cooper type costumes, and I loved it so much I would almost sleep in it. I mean, the silly looking pajamas you wear.
I don't know if that would be very comfortable to sleep in. Also, you are the, I think, only second guest to bring up the fact that they were Ben Cooper costumes before we did, because those costumes come up all the time, but nobody like usually knows the name. They're like, yeah, it's those terrible costumes with the plastic smock and the mask.
If I still had those today, I mean, it'd be worth a fortune. First one I did was, I don't even know what it was called. It was a silly, like, genie monster. I remember the mask looked like a kind of a misshapen monster look, and then the front of it was kind of like the little costume with smoke in a bottle. It was just a strange looking thing. But I loved the silly thing. I was, you know, my first costume ever. I was like 6 years old.
Do you remember having a least favorite costume?
Oh, no. Yeah. I think I would. I love Halloween so much. Any chance I had to celebrate, it didn't matter what I wore. I mean, my most fun was when I was a teenager. I did my face like in the blues and greens and with food coloring. And then I put on a suit with my hands were colored too. And I went into a restaurant and I started going in there and I wouldn't talk because I realized when you just stare at people, they get very uncomfortable very quick. And I would sit and I was a tall person. So I would sit down at their table and just stare at them when they're trying to eat. And they were freaking out. I knew the wait staff, so they were having a good time. But I've got people where they actually got up and walked out. They were that uncomfortable.
Nice. I call that a success.
Yeah, I do too.
Let's see. Some of our guests have reported a sort of a dividing line where prior to the dividing line, they were afraid of horror. And then after the dividing line, it became enjoyment. But it sounds like for you, at least, that it was always enjoyment. Or was there something that scared you early on and then it didn't become enjoyment until later?
Well, I was a daytime horror fan as a kid, and I was really into cryptids and the reports about UFOs. And I was always like, dear God, let me see a Bigfoot monster or let me see a UFO. And I'm out in the country, and that went to about sunset. And then when it got dark, I'm like, dear God, remember what I asked you earlier? Let's cancel until the sun comes back up.
God, you still there? Yeah. maybe not.
I'm sure you were not the only one.
Yeah, because it was spooky at night because I used to hear animals and wild animals. My cats used to slaughter rabbits outside my bedroom window. And if you never heard a rabbit scream, it sounds just like a woman. Yeah. So it was great. It was great loving all the spooky stuff in the daytime. But at night, like, no.
Do you have any reoccurring dreams or reoccurring nightmares?
No, I mean, even to this day, I love nightmares. I love a good scary dream. I absolutely delight in them. I wake up all happy. It's kind of the weirdness in me.
I didn't say you couldn't have enjoyed it. I just asked if you had any.
not really. Well, the only reoccurring dream I've ever had in life is about stuff falling out of the sky. And I've dreamed about airplanes.
Onto you or just in general?
General. The first one was about a satellite-type thing crashing in my backyard. And I saw planes and all kinds of stuff. I mean, probably partly because I was in the Air Force as a jet engine mechanic, partly because I lived near the Space Coast and watched rockets go up every day. And oddly enough, there was actually an incident here in this area called the Castleberry Explosion, and you can look it up, where on 4th of July, there was this loud bang. Some people thought of thunder, but it was so loud that it set off every car alarm in the neighborhood. It scared the crap out of me. And there started being reports on the radio station, people calling in saying that something came down in their area and near the old dog track. And NASA showed up in these vehicles and fenced the area off. And people started complaining of headaches and other things. So we don't know if something did actually come down. So maybe my dream forewarned of this. I don't know. It was very close where it happened.
And you also grew up in the era of duck and cover. So there's that, too.
Yeah, those are good times. mean, hide under the desk and reading about the bombs going off. And, you know, I remember, you know, I was in during the military during the Cold War. So we were always the threat of the Soviet Union annihilating us. I worked on nuclear bombers for a while. So when you're working on a plane, you realize there's nukes in the bomb bay. It's kind of tingling.
Yeah, I'm sure. Get to look over for a minute and just imagine, you know, thinking about what would happen if it went off.
Oh, yeah. I actually watched a B-52 bomber burn to the ground on the flight line. So that was kind of spectacular.
Hopefully it didn't have anything in it at the time.
No. At the time it didn't. Or I wouldn't have been sitting there watching it. I would have been hightailing it out of there.
Every man for himself. let's see. Was there ever a time in your childhood when you were terrified of something in real life?
Oh, Yeah, probably. I mean, I had the same fear as a lot of people, you know, the neighbor's vicious dogs kind of thing. You know, I remember running up a swing set one time to escape a dog attack. But I guess, you know, just it's more of imaginary than anything. I mean, we all have the fear of the unknown. If you're walking down a country road and it's at nighttime, you hear something rustling in the brush. I mean, a rabbit sounds like a pack of wild dogs. I mean, you don't know what it is. So it's more of the fear of unknown, but never people or animals that I could tell and knew what they were.
Okay. Flipping that question around, was ever a time in your childhood when you felt exceptionally safe or happy or blissful?
Yeah, probably, you know, when you're in your bedroom surrounded by, you know, toys and monster mags and, you know, listening to music and you got a TV, it plays one channel and you're watching old beach party movies. I guess I felt pretty good at that time.
Okay. So this next two, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, in the safe place.
Yes.
Yeah. In the happy place.
Yes. The good place. let's see. So the next two questions are also a pair. Going to start with the negative one so we can end on the positive. Do you remember the first person you hurt?
Physically or mentally?
Either one.
Either or.
Oh, I don't know. I don't really think I've hurt too many people. I mean, you know, I probably, you know, pissed off my wife on more than one occasion, and my kids. But I always, you know, even though I never wanted to admit it, I always tried to be the nice guy. I don't think you know, few fights. I mean, I took martial arts, so there's probably some people that gave bruises to. They weren't too happy about it, but never intentionally for anything.
Okay, that's a good thing. Do you remember the first person you helped?
Family. You know, kids. Did a lot of stuff for my kids growing up when they, you know, went through their teenage years and got in trouble. And, you know, I was always there for them. And, you know, because mom would be like, you deal with it kind of thing. So, you know, I was a dad. I had two boys. So, yeah, I helped them out as much as possible.
Yeah, I can see that. That's, like you say, dad with two boys.
Yeah. And now a 10-second self-advertising spot. We absolutely believe that word of mouth means more than any kind of advertising campaign. If you like what we're doing, please just tell somebody about us. Back to the show.
Moving into teenage years, any books or movies really stand out to you from your teenage years?
Yeah. I mean, the first book was probably The Exorcist. I mean, in this small town, you never saw books anywhere but the Rexall drugstore. And The Exorcist was the first book I saw everywhere. I mean, I saw it at the IGA supermarket, which you never saw books in the supermarket at that time. And everybody had a copy. And I remember getting to see The Exorcist on the first run when it opened in the little theater. I absolutely loved it. I mean, you know, it's a creepy book. And it was a great movie. But the fad, the cult that it started, everywhere you go in newsstands, everybody was talking about demons and witches and the Catholic Church and exorcism and, you know, that kind of thing. So it created the whole movement. Probably the first movie in that era, my teenage years, saw was scaring me with Jaws. I was in tech school in the Air Force. I was 17 years old. And I saw Jaws at the theater, and just the opening scenes in Jaws where the woman is swimming off the beach at night and she's skinny dipping and the shark hits her. And it totally freaked me out. Of course, I had been drinking, so that didn't help. I mean, and the thought of what would you do? You're out there alone and something hits you and you reach down under the water and your leg's gone. Mm-hmm. What's going to go through your mind realizing you just became part of the food chain? Yep. And that really terrified me because this was something that could actually happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that is why it was so effective.
I felt the same way about Jurassic Park. Not because it could happen because it's an animal that's out there, but because people are that stupid. They would do it.
I still like the thing that came up after COVID, that there was a meme that went around that said, we owe the writers of Jurassic Park an apology that, you know, it's much more believable today to realize that, yes, they would reopen the park as quickly as they did after Jurassic Park.
It's true.
So going back to The Exorcist for a minute, was there a particular scene in the book or in the movie that stood out to you?
In the movie, even in the book, I mean, just the layers upon layers of suspense, the building up. I mean, you watch The Exorcist and you don't see anything for like the first hour. Mm-hmm. I mean, you hear the sounds from upstairs and the heavy atmosphere and the terror you're seeing through the other people's eyes and how they're looking. I mean, and you know something's going upstairs, but you never see it till halfway through the movie. And so I loved how they built everything up. And of course, you go in there and just the makeup effect that they did on Linda Blair was incredible. The floating on the bed, the scene on the stomach where, you know, the words are farming. That was pure magic in cinema. I'd love to go back and watch that movie over and over again just to see the effects because they were so well done.
They really were.
Cool. Let's see. Exorcist, Jaws. Anything else stand out to you from that part of your life?
You know, there's a lot in there. I mean, Night of the Living Dead. I mean, that's a classic. I mean, you can watch that one over and over again and never get tired of it because Romero did such a good job on that thing. Of course, all the classic movies I started finally getting to see when I was a teenager. So I get to see, you know, all the universal monsters I love. But yeah, Exorcist and Jaws, Night of the Living Dead, that's probably the big ones at that era.
Okay. Any particular scene in Night of the Living Dead standing out for you?
Just the whole creepiness of the opening scenes where they're in the cemetery and, you know, they're coming to get you, Barbara, which is a great line. It is. You know, Bill Heisman as the original zombie. I became friends with Meryl for years before he passed away. And just discussing, you know, the way they did that. I mean, it was all shot on a shoestring budget. And, you know, what they did was, you know, way ahead of its time for those type of movies. Because in 68, there wasn't anything like that out there.
I think if I remember correctly, one of the tricks they did with the zombies was they had them eating just like real flesh. Like it was raw chicken bones, but like a giant turkey bone. So it looked like a human arm or. Yeah,
the body laying upstairs in the beginning of the movie when they get into the house is a sheep's head that's been skinned. So I never knew that for years. I thought it was a, you know, a really nice looking human head, but no, it's a sheep's head.
Yeah, when you're on a shoestring budget, you can't go wrong with just real flesh.
That's it.
It looks real because it is.
There's a reason for that. Yeah. Let's see. Did you participate in Halloween as a teen?
Oh, yeah, not as much. Okay. I mean, I think I stopped around 12 or so because, you know, where I was at, you had to go into town to do trick-or-treating because you don't trick-or-treat in the country. You go knock at somebody's door in the country, you might get shot. In fact, when I was a kid, I went to my uncle's house and I could see through the window him grabbing his gun. Yeah. it's like maybe a mask is not such a good idea late at night knocking on somebody's house. But I kind of too busy partying. I mean, we had Halloween parties, but it wasn't the same as the fun of trick-or-treating.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Did you connect with any horror fans in your teens?
Not really. I went in the military when I was 17, so okay. I was overseas by the time I was 18, and they weren't really a horror fan. They were people who wanted to go down to Madrid and get drunk. I mean, horror wasn't a high priority then. I mean, everybody's chasing women and stuff. I mean,
yeah. We like to ask because, you know, different people go through different, you know, paths in life, so you never know until you ask.
I was lucky enough later in life, I mean, to discover horror conventions. I didn't know there was such things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's one here in Orlando. It's called Spooky Empire.
Yep. Yeah, I'm familiar. Been a few times.
Very big. I've been going there since like their second one, which was started in South Florida. So, you know, it's great because I've gotten to meet a lot of the actors and stuff from the movies and talking shop with them. So it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite part. The best part is when you meet actors not in the in the autograph queue or in the official means, just because they're all very chill and they're just kind of walking around. I was there this last year and ran to the Greasy Strangler just out in the smoking area.
Nice. I remember when it was down South Florida before it got big. You'd be in the bar, you'd be hanging out with Doug Bradley, who's Pinhead, and then Freddie Krueger and all the guys.
Jane Hodder.
Yeah, and there's no line, so you're just you're hanging with them. You're drinking beer, talking to these guys. It's like now it's a little bit harder to do that, but it's still enjoyable going there.
Yeah, absolutely. It can still be like that in some of the smaller areas. Like there's where was it? I want to say Indianapolis, but I don't think it was Indianapolis. It was maybe Cleveland. There was some place around here that I went to one, and it was a fairly small event, and I wound up sitting next to the Bart with Michael Berryman, which didn't really have a chat with him because there was somebody else who wanted to have a chat with him, and I just let him be. But things like that can happen.
Michael was living down in Florida for a while. He came down and was living in Ocala. I don't know if he's still here or not. He might have gone back to California, but he's been a spooky several times. Great guy.
Yes, I'm friends with him on Facebook. I see he posts stuff from a farm, but I don't remember where it's located. I'd have to go look.
That would be awesome to meet Michael Berryman just randomly in Ocala one day.
Yeah. Let's see. So no reoccurring dreams as a teen. Was there ever a time in your teens where you felt afraid of something in real life?
Oh, life itself is scary. I don't know. We all always
especially when you're a teen,
going through basic training for the military, that was scary. I mean, that whole thing, 6 weeks of a head trip. I mean, you're terrified the whole time. You're terrified of failure. You're terrified of the instructors. You're terrified of getting yelled at. You don't want to stand out in the crowd. You're hoping when they come around, they're looking at the guy next to you and not you. So, yeah, that was that was scary, but you could handle it. I mean, and as you went through those weeks, you became less afraid. At the time you got to the end, you weren't afraid of anything. Working on jet engines on a flight line when they're running full force, it's kind of terrifying, but I got used to it. I mean, I got used to, these breathing dragons that were screaming next to me and could kill you if you walked behind them, but it was terrifying.
Or in front.
It's exhilarating at the same time. I used to, I'm admitting this, I shouldn't admit it. I used to, for fun, throw cans of oil into the exhaust of an F-4 fighter. And watch them shoot back and blow up. And it got to be such a thing that when I'd grab a case of oil, everybody I worked with would see that, would jump on the truck with me.
Nice.
Like, well, we were on a trim pad. F4 has a tail hook, and we have to tie it down. And they didn't want to you're supposed to shut the engines down and motor the engines and then raise a tail hook. But the guys never wanted to do that because then they're in a hot cockpit because the engines are shut down. So I would climb under the jet exhaust with it just inches from my face and get back to where the tail hook was, where it hooked together to the pad, and knocked the pin out. When if I sat up, I would have burnt my face off. I mean, it was scary, but hell, I was early 20s, late teens, so I didn't.
Yeah, you're invincible.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that kind of leans into the next question, which is whether or not there was a time in your teens when you felt exceptionally calm or safe or bliss.
Oh, bliss. And I don't know. Probably when I threw out three going shots down of to Madrid. Yeah, going down to Madrid, a few shots of scotch, that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, you know, alcohol is heavily involved when you're in the military. But, I miss, like in Europe, sunsets. I love just walking around the cities at sunset because you could smell the cooking and hear the people and the kids playing. Mm-hmm. And it was pure bliss. I do miss that. Every once in a while, the atmosphere here in Florida will get cool enough that I'm reminded of those. And that was probably the happiest time of my life, was walking around in the small towns in Spain during when the sun was setting and it was kind of cool, like the fall season. Mm.
That is one of the few things that I really do miss about Florida is, getting out to go out to the beach and watch the sunset over the ocean.
Yeah. I was talking about that with family this weekend, and like how my sister lives right near the beach, and every time she and her husband go down there, like, he just looks at her. He's like, why don't we do this every day?
Yeah. Something about sunsets. I always, when I was in Spain, I always looked at the sunset and thinking, okay, America is that direction. It's to the west. I need to get back. And once I got back, I realized I wasn't missing a damn thing. I should have stayed where I was.
Mm-hmm. And now a 10-second self-advertising spot. Sign up for our newsletter. The link is on the front page of horrormakesushappy.com. We will never share your info because that shit is stupid and we also hate it. Now back to the show.
All right, well, let's roll into adult years here. What maybe top two or three things have you found impactful in your adult years from the horror genre?
Oh, that is, even as an adult, it's okay to have that little kid mentality. I mean, the little kid where you're sitting on the edge of the couch watching something scary. I still remember back to that where, the feeling of horror for the first time and the discovery of it. So even as an adult, horror is such an emotional genre. It's like riding a roller coaster. I mean, you get on a roller coaster, it scares the crap out of you, but you get on it again and again and again for that same damn feeling. I get the same way.
Has there been anything that really made you feel those kinds of feelings as an adult?
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot of stories. I can't name one particular author. I mean, there's so many of them. I've read so much. I'm on a kick right now that I'm reading, a lot of dead authors. I love Victorian ghost stories. I love that creepiness you get in the old houses. So yeah, there's that stuff that gets you that tingle, especially if you take a horror novel out to a campsite and read it in the woods. Oh, that's really great stuff.
Let's see. Already answered the nightmares thing. Anything that has terrified you in real life as an adult?
6 o'clock news.
Accurate. I thought you might go there.
I mean, there is nothing I can write or read in a horror novel that is as terrifying as what shows on the news at 6:30. I mean, man's inhumanity against man just blows me away. How can people be so cruel, so stupid, and continually do the same thing? I mean, going back to the book I'm working on, Civil War, it's like, my God, didn't we learn anything from the Civil War, from World War II, and all these other terrible times? I mean, we're setting ourselves up for it again. So the news terrifies me. Greedy people terrify me. I mean, at least with monsters, you know where they're coming from. I'd rather hang around with vampires than politicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a phrase that's been said on this podcast and over the years just many times. You sometimes find yourself going to horrific fiction to escape the horrific reality, because horrific fiction is still better than what we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly. That's why my fiction, I never do stuff that's like real life. I don't write about serial killers. I don't write about child molesters. I don't write about kidnappers. I want to give people escape from reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I do monster stories, I do supernatural stories, I'll have vampires or werewolves or something that in the back of your brain, you got that safety word where it tells you it's not real. You could shut it off. I mean, I'm not going to do something where it could be real to the person the next day. It could really happen to them. That just scares the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So flipping that question around again, as an adult, was there a moment where you felt exceptionally calm or safe or bliss?
Well, in my house, I mean, my house is a sanctuary. I'm very calm here. I've let maybe a handful of people come into my house in 30 years. I mean, I'll meet them anywhere else, a restaurant, or wherever I want to meet but this is my sanctuary. And when I come in here and close the doors, I'm surrounded by stuff I love. I have people living here that I love, and I feel safe here. And my son's growing up here, it felt safe the same way. And they want their houses to be like what I have, where you got that sanctuary, that sense of calm.
For me, the phrase that I like to use was the old fortress of solitude.
Exactly.
Man's home is his castle.
It is. I don't invite the neighbors over. I mean, I got people wanting to come over here, but I've had a handful of people, and I've only had a couple fellow writers in here who have spent the night in 30 years. And those are very special people. I mean, anybody else is like, no, I'll go meet you somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I've lived here, 3 years now, and I've only had Chris has come once, and I've had my cousin stop by once, and that's it. Not counting, contractors or something like that, but, do you remember the last person you hurt?
Probably maybe my youngest son. We got in an argument a few days ago over silly stuff. when you're arguing and fighting, you say shit you don't mean. So, words are a terrible thing. It's better just to put them on paper than speak them. But now we're fine.
Good. Do you remember the last person you helped?
Helped. Probably my son. Same one. Always doing stuff for you. I mean, your family's always a love-hate relationship. You love them one day, you hate them the next, and, you don't want to be left alone, and then they bug you, and you get mad about it. Like, leave me be. But, I'm always doing stuff for people.
Okay. Do you participate in Halloween now as an adult?
Oh, yes. I look forward to it. We go all out in our yard. We have skeletons and zombies in the cemetery and lights and, just crazy. Inside of my house is Halloween year round. I've got a used casket sitting in the living room with a skeleton in it. Mm-hmm. I got probably 7 life-size figures. I'm looking around here, and it's like, I got, even here in the office, I'm looking at toys and figures, the Living Dead dolls, and just, signed pictures of all the people from horror movies that I love. And my house is kind of spooky. When my granddaughter stayed with us for a while, her friends would come over, and the moms would always come in, because I had a hearse in the driveway at the time. And they would tiptoe inside and look around. And one time I walked out of the bedroom. Actually, the woman screamed. I terrified her. But the second time they come, they always bring the camera to take pictures, and they're always smiling because they realize that, this is fun stuff.
And it's like a museum.
Yeah, they get over their fears. So Halloween's a year-round thing for me, but we bring the inside stuff outside in the actual month of October.
I was just about to tease you about that, thinking that you don't have many guests over and you've got all this stuff for your own personal enjoyment, but you never get to share it.
Yeah, that's right. It's for me. I don't care about anybody else. It's for me.
Can relate. Yep.
What was I going to ask you? There was something I was going to ask you. Oh, do you dress up at all as an adult?
Oh, I do. I've done zombies. I mean, I've done like a zombie fest, Zombietoberfest in Orlando a few times where I've dressed as a zombie. I do. I've done some nice skull work, makeup. So I have fun scaring the crap out of kids and chasing them down the street. I've done Leatherface a few times. It was kind of funny though. Halloween 2 years ago, a group of older girls come by and they didn't want to come up and get candid. They're like, no, you'll chase us. I promise I won't chase you. They go, you chase us every year. I said, look, I promise Scout's Honor I won't chase you. I gave them the candy, and they're walking down the street, and there was like 4 in the front, and 1 girl was behind. And she looks back at me and smiles. He goes, roar, and scared the crap out of her friends. biggest kick out of that.
So technically, you didn't lie.
Let's see. Okay. So the next 2 questions, they're not just about horror and it's not just about any particular time in your life. Going to cover your entire life. What movie would you say you've watched more times than any other?
Oh man, that's tough. It would be close between Evan Costello Meets Frankenstein and The Ghost of Mr. Chicken. Maybe Ghost of Mr. Chicken.
Okay. I was about to say, I don't think I've ever heard of that one before, but I vaguely recall Don Knotts, so maybe it did.
It's not truly horror, but he goes into what he presumes is a haunted house, so that's close enough to follow my genre of horror. It involves ghosts. So, not only is it, you got the fear element in it, and kind of the plays on it, but it's comedy. So you're sitting there laughing or smiling. The same thing with Evan Costello Meets Frankenstein. You got Glenn Strange as Frankenstein, and that wonderful makeup. You've got Lon Chaney doing the Wolfman. You got Bela Lugosi as Dracula. You got the big three of Universal. Mm-hmm. Then you got the comedy of Edmund Costello. So it's a wonderful movie. One of my favorite ever since I was a kid.
Yep. The I've been doing research on horror movies for a trivia game that we're putting together. And it's kind of funny. You go on IMDb and Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is one of the higher rated horror movies across, you know, every decade. Like if you search from 1920 to today, that is probably, I can't remember what number it is, but it's, I think it's in the top 100. That is,
I don't think you'd be a horror movie fan if you don't enjoy that. I think you got to turn in your membership badge.
I'm going to have to go back through our previous episodes and find out somebody else. I know somebody else brought up the Ghost of Mr. Chicken. I'm going to have to go figure out who that was. That's going to bug me.
Now, when I was a kid, when I was young, I just happened to think, you know, I was young. That one of the earliest movies that scared me. I really don't recall this. It was a movie called The Manster, I think it was it's an American movie. I think it was filmed in Japan. And a guy grows a second head in the movie. It's, you know, second body.
So I see. It's like old, the monster, but it's a man. So the monster is the man head.
I was 4 years old, I was living in my aunt's house. In fact, we lived in the attic. My mother was a single mom. And I was down watching this movie, and there's a scene where he's in front of the mirror and pulls his shirt back, and you see an eyeball poking out of his shoulder. Man, it got me upstairs in that attic so damn fast. I mean, I didn't. It scared the crap out of me, and it took me years to find out what that movie was. I didn't find out until about 10 years ago. Never knew
eyeball the title. Poking out of his shoulder. Was that scene in Army of Darkness an homage to Manster, maybe?
It probably was, because it had the same effect. It was the same thing. Manster was done for serious. It wasn't done for laughs.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that both of the two that you said you've watched more times than any other, they're both comedies. And so normally the way that we've learned to do this is instead of asking somebody what their favorite movie is, because it's usually a very difficult thing for people to pick up, we ask, what movie have you seen more often than any other? And then we ask, now, would you consider that to be your favorite movie, or would you pick something else?
Oh, that's really tough, because I've got so many that I love. I mean, I love the original Halloween. I've watched it a million times. Mm-hmm. I love the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I've watched it a ton of stuff. And with those movies, I watch them for enjoyment, but I also try to go back and find mistakes. I mean, Carpenter's film, watching it, because you know it's set in California, but they're making it look like Illinois, and they're throwing fake leaves. Right. And it took me years before I saw a palm tree in that movie, and you see one in the cemetery scene.
Yep.
It's like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where they filmed that. The guy was growing marijuana. So for a long time, I was looking for a marijuana bush. He had a plantation of weed. And the first time I realized I was getting close to discovering it on film was when I saw sunflowers. And I know that people grow sunflowers in marijuana fields because they grow taller than the pot, so you can't see it from the airplane. Mm. It took a long time, and there's one scene where I swear it's a marijuana bush in the background. It's kind of in the back. It's hard to see, but it took me years of rewatching this silly movie trying to catch it with a marijuana plant scene.
All right, now I'm going to rewatch it myself.
I'm amused that you didn't watch it for the horror. You were watching it for the weed.
Well, that's like the third or fourth time you watch it. You know, the sixth and seventh time you watch it to find the weed.
Yeah, you're trying to find the mistakes, and you're trying to say, it's so well done, you can't find a mistake. They did a great job on both movies. You're looking for those little things, because you've already seen Leatherface kill people 1,000 times. I mean, now I'm looking at the background. I'm studying the background of it.
I can relate to that a bit. There were certain comic books that I really liked, and like you say, you end up going over the art so much that, like, you look at every detail, and then you start looking at the things in the background, and you start noticing other things that you're like, holy shit.
Well, horror films, you watch it first for the film because you enjoy it, and then you go back and you watch it again for the scares. You watch it for the kills, and then you go back and like, okay, I love these kills and these scenes. How do they do it? And then you start going back and analyzing how they made it work. Mm-hmm. I mean, a horror film is like the only genre that you can watch the movie over and over, even if you know the bloody ending, and still enjoy it.
I won't say any, but it's one of the few, because you could do that with, like, you know, murder mysteries and stuff like that too, or just even general mysteries. But you don't necessarily do that with drama movies or action
adventure
type stuff. Yeah,
rom-coms. Yeah, you don't do that.
How did you do that? Do you see? I think we already know the answer to this one, but I'll ask anyway. Do you see any common threads about what kind of horror movies you like? Cannibalism, occult, metaphysical? In this case, I would go with monsters.
monsters.
My favorite's Monsters and Supernatural, but I watch them all. I mean, I got probably 1,000 DVDs in the other room. I've got Cannibal Holocaust. I've got the werewolf movies. I've got, you know, Friday the 13th. There's so many that I enjoy them all. I mean, I have no particular favorite. There are some that I'll watch over and over, you know, like, you know, Ginger Snaps. I watched that a bunch of times. Trick or Treat. I've watched it. I didn't like it the first time, but it's one of my favorites now because it's so effective the way it's put together, you know, because it's done like
really Pulp Fiction.
It's kind of like Pulp Fiction where you don't see the beginning. You don't go beginning, middle, and end. It jumps around. Silly Movie, Poltergeist, which I absolutely love that movie.
I forgot all about Poltergeist.
It's funny because it's a musical. I mean, I was watching it one time, put it on. Okay, trauma film. Well, it's going to be dumb. I'm going to enjoy this. They started singing, and the songs are good. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's a musical. Lloyd, you're brilliant.
Well, this would be the spot where we're talking about, whatever common themes we can pick up and then maybe talk about how those intersect with the horror genre. I'm having a little bit of I've identified some things, but it's like four or five different things, and I'm trying to see if I can find a way to synthesize all of this, because some guests, it is, you know, four or five different separate things, but then the other guests, like, no, there's this one very clear factor that is important to them. But then there are other times where it could be four or five, but they all are like under one umbrella, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I'm taking a look at my notes and seeing if I can identify an umbrella, but I don't really find one.
I think horror just basically comes down to classic good versus evil. I mean, if you strip everything away from it, you've got got the person in a situation when they're going up against something terrifying. I mean, and you know, they usually, in most cases, they win. Very rarely does the hero or, you know, protagonist die at the end. I mean, it's always good versus evil, and by watching it, you know, we kind of live through their emotions, we live through their fears, we live through their strength. I mean, if it's done right, we're cheering on the superhero at the end who's killing the bad guy, who's defeating Jason or Freddy Krueger or whoever, Michael Myers. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis was, you know, she's fighting evil. I mean, you got the darkness, the shape. So that's, you know, kind of a theme that runs through just about most of horror, just about all of it.
Yeah.
As Dr. Loomis said, the evil is gone from here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you the three or four things that I was picking up on. So family obviously is very important to you. We talked about the things that were important to you in terms of who you hurt and who you helped. There's potentially the identifying with monsters might also even fall under family if you expand the family to a sense of community. We talked about danger, you know, Jaws, you know, being part of the food chain, and, you know, Exorcist and human cruelty and greed that came up. So, you know, there's elements of danger, but also we've talked about escaping from reality, not even really necessarily dwelling on, you know, the actual, you know, cruelty in the real world, but having this escape kind of way of talking about it to where you don't have to deal with the too much of the reality, you know, hitting too close to home. And then another topic that I'm thinking about is joy-based, which we've talked on this podcast before, that, you know, there's kind of two ways of looking at reasons why people like things or are afraid of things. It can either be trauma-based or joy-based. And in your case, it sounds more joy-based. It doesn't sound like there's anything like no real phobias. It was always a joy from the start. And even, you know, the two favorite movies that you mentioned, Abbott and Costello and the Don Knotts movie, it's there's a joy there. It's not a fear based experience, if that makes sense. And so that's what I was saying. I'm trying to gel all of these different ideas together and see if there's a common thread here.
Yeah, the Don Knotts movie is kind of like watching the old Munsters show or the Addams Family.
Yeah,
it's spooky, but it's got the humor to it.
Yeah.
So you get to indulge in a monster kid in yourself and still have a laugh while you're doing it.
I also felt with like Addams Family and the Munsters, that also kind of keyed in with identification and community or family, because particularly family, because it's about two families.
I wanted them to adopt me as a kid. I really did. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be in the Munster house or the Addams Family house because they look like they're having so much fun in their own quirky, weird way.
And lots of stuff in that house to play with.
A ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you think is relevant to your enjoyment of horror that we haven't touched on here? Or either we've completely missed something, or you think were kind of slightly off the mark on something and tweak it a little bit.
I love horror. Like, I love the slow, suspenseful horror. Mm-hmm. I love the, you know, it doesn't, where they don't show the critter or the killer right away. I love that whole looking over your shoulder type situation. I think it relates to real life. I mean, we all have a fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the whole, the movies where they're like the last halfway through the movie, they're like the killer's in the house with you kind of situation. You know, that terror right there, you know, or you're looking out the corner of your eyes, looking where shadows move and you don't know what it is. I mean, I love, you know, late night working. I get the same feel when I'm wired on coffee at 3 a.m. where there's things moving at the corner of my eyes. So I love that where they slowly build it up. I mean, Jaws was incredible because they built up the suspense mainly because the shark didn't work. We didn't get to see it.
True.
I use that example of my first novel, Crota, because, you know, I didn't want to show the monster, and I barely described it. You know, I let all the readers describe it themselves in their own imagination. I actually had people come up to me and say they saw the Crota walking around the Ocala National Forest, which is the highest compliment you can get when somebody thinks they really saw something that you made up out of your imagination.
Yeah.
Put it in their head.
Yeah.
Well, normally the follow-up here that we would ask is, why are these things important to you? You can't really do that in your case because, you know, it's kind of an obvious thing. Why is family important to you? Why is joy important to you?
Yeah, who likes joy? What are you, weird?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, family's important. And I mean, it's stories that, I think the ones that have the most, pull on me are like stories where they're, you know, protecting their family. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Stephen King's The Mist. He's protecting his kid, you know, I mean, against the crazies in the supermarket and the monsters outside the supermarket, which are the bigger monsters, the things that are made in the lab, or the nut job religious woman who wants to sacrifice his son. I mean, it plays an important part of horror because we don't care about the characters and we can't relate the characters, then we're not going to be scared of the movie.
Yeah.
Well, so the follow-up to that we usually ask is, why horror, though? Because couldn't you explore those themes in other genres?
I could. I mean, but horror, as a writer, I enjoy horror more than anything else. I mean, I've ghostwritten science fiction. I've done children's books. I've done comic books. But, you know, it's one thing when somebody contacts you and say, hey, I love your story. And it's another thing when they contact you and go, you bastard, you kept me up all night. There you're just like, yes. I mean, you
know, mission
like,
accomplished.
Exactly. I mean, I had a guy in Jacksonville, Florida, who wrote me, and he had just read my novel, and his truck broke down on a lonely, deserted dirt road, and he's working on the engine with a flashlight. It's late at night, and the crickets stopped chirping. And in my book, the crickets stopped chirping meant the monster was there. He said he ran and dove in his truck and locked the door. You know, I've done my mission in life. I scared somebody. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Ariel Shulman, who directed Paranormal Activity 3 and 4, he gave us a great quote. He said, "Good horror," or I can't remember if he said good horror or great horror, one of the two. Good horror ruins one specific thing for one specific person for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. That's great. It's true. If you can get under people's skin, I mean, if I can scare one person, I'm happy. If I get one person complaining, I used to, before everything got really politically correct and people started, you know, having websites about animals dying, I used to, you know, occasionally in a book, I hate admitting this, I had an animal die. And people ask me, why did you kill the dog or why did you kill the cat? I said, because I get more hate letters from that than anything.
It's true. If you want to push that envelope, animal death.
I could kill 100 people, 100 adults, and nobody cares. I kill one.
Don't matter.
My God, I get flooded with emails.
Yeah. I don't know if it's kind of one of those things where it's like, careful what you put out into the world.
I know. Now I'd be more reluctant about doing it because people are, you know, with the trigger warnings and stuff. But back when I started, it wasn't, you know, so bad. You didn't get persecuted for, you know, for little things like that. But, you know, I understand where they're coming from. I did it just because, you know, people did get upset. And sometimes horror has to make you uncomfortable.
Yeah. More, I was joking about the fact that other authors hearing you say that, and then everybody goes out and says, yeah, I'm going to do that now. Slew of books. Were
That was my idea.
Well, so is there anything that you maybe thought of earlier in the call that you didn't get a chance to say? maybe conversation took a left turn?
You know, horror, it's like, it's a scary genre, but the people who read it, the people who embrace it, are like the nicest people I ever met. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very intelligent people, too. I know college professors and teachers and, you know, scientists, and they're all into horror. I'm like, why do you read stuff like this? For the same reason, you know, it's escape fiction, especially popular in A World's Gone Mad, which is what we're facing right now in real life. I mean, it gets your mind off troubles of the day better than probably any other genre. I do like science fiction, too, because it gives us a hope for the future.
Yeah.
I mean, if you combine science fiction with horror, it's even better. Alien is a great film. Aliens is even even better film. Yeah. So I love that when they combine the two genres.
Yep. Yeah. Event Horizon. It's another good
one. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Now you got a point there, though, because like horror is an escape and sci-fi is an escape, too. All fiction is really an escape. But I think maybe horror is more of an escape from the horrors of real life, because it's just that much closer to the horrors of real life. Like it's a shorter journey, if you will, to watch a horror film when you're dealing with horrific shit than it is to, you know, like, I want to watch a romantic film. It's not.
Well, what he said about the escape, too, is, you know, we've also seen through this podcast now, where we've done over 150 episodes, and there is a pretty clear distinction between true crime fans and horror fans, that the people we've talked to, at least, have not been fans of true crime. Which is sort of an interesting thing that I'm sure some other podcasts could dig into. It's not a path I care to go down at the moment, but I do find it interesting how little overlap it seems there is between the horror community and the true crime community.
Yeah. Well, like you said, they're mostly nice people. They don't like terror things.
Yeah. Cool. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Before we hit the closing here, do you want to let, again, everybody know what you're currently working on?
I am currently working on a new novel. I'm not going to give the title. I'm sorry, because I'm superstitious. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I give a title, it in the book never happens. Mm-hmm. It is set during the Civil War era. It is a dark fantasy / horror. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. Cool. And it has, you know, monsters and ghosties and all the fun stuff you crave, you know, and every red-blooded horror fan will love.
Cool. Well, we're going to get together with you offline to get some pictures and a bio, and we'll put together a bio page for you on our website. And then if people want to find out more about you, they can just go to horrormakesushappy.com, go to the episodes page, look for Owl Going Back, and then, you know, from your bio, we can also link to whatever it is that you want us to link to. So I can link to your homepage and things like that. So,
okay,
cool. Well, again, thank you very much for your time. Thank you to anybody else out there listening. If you go to horrormakesushappy.com, do what I just said to find out more information about Owl. Other than that, like, share, subscribe, tell a friend, do all the fun stuff.
Yeah.